experience the ripple effect. This is the Empowering Youth Podcast from Building Utah Youth, a nonprofit organization established in 2007 to provide powerful leadership training to the youth of our communities. And now, here's your host, BI board member, co-owner of Rapport International, and certified trainer, Brett Johnston.
Hello, and welcome back to the Empowering Youth Podcast. I'm Brett Johnston.
I'm Jeff Gattano.
I'm JJ Chinowski.
And I am Mesa Whitaker, and I have a very special guest here. We're actually blood related, so I'm very, very excited to introduce.
That's why he's so special.
He's so special. Love it. My cousin, Cordell Whitaker.
Welcome, Cordell.
Wow.
Spit it out, Buttercup.
This is going to be fun. This is going to be a fun podcast.
We're all very excited.
It's going to be so much. It's like once you get Cordell out of the bottle, he's one of those that doesn't go back in the bottle. Oh, you know?
Love
genie
it.
Right? In the right. Bottle.
Yeah.
Cordell, I love you already.
So welcome. Welcome to the podcast, man. We've been excited to have you on. And definitely love your family. Your family has been, you know, we look at the Building Utah Youth, and Building Utah Youth would not be the Building Utah Youth without
your family,
you know,
amen.
All the way from grandma and grandpa, you know, just huge supporters of everything that's gone on, from, you know, your parents going to class and you guys getting to go to class and all these things that have kind of transpired over the years, but it's brought out, it's accentuated a lot of the Whitaker way, I would call it, because the Whitaker way was already pretty high performing with the enthusiasm, you know, projection part. So it just kind of, you know, accentuated it.
Yeah.
But want to hear your story tonight. So where do you want to start with your story? How was childhood?
I want to hear about your childhood.
Yeah. I want to hear about your childhood. I want to hear about your siblings, you know, everything. So go all the way back, you know, to like one.
One?
Oh, sorry. Well, as far back as you remember. Go.
Yeah. So grew up in Corinn, Utah. Just
middle of nowhere.
Yeah. So everybody, a little perspective on where Corinn, Utah is basically where the railroads met.
Yes, yeah. God's country.
Yeah, pretty close. It was like they got to the middle of nowhere and the trains ran into each other.
And they're like, let's build here.
That's where Corinn, Utah.
So go ahead.
Yeah. So, brain fart.
No,
Corinn,
you're
Utah.
Good.
Grew up in Corinn.
Yeah, grew up in Corinn. Got four siblings, two brothers, two sisters.
And where do you fall?
I'm one from the bottom. One.
Nice. Nice.
That explains a lot.
Wow.
Right.
So you're still living in that same town that you grew up in.
Yes.
Okay.
I live two houses down and across the street.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's awesome.
It's great. It's definitely a town where everybody knows everybody.
So tell me about your siblings when you were young.
What is childhood? What was it like for you?
So how do I want to phrase that?
Without profanity.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the key.
Yeah.
Wild.
Close.
Kind of, but not really. We were very free range children. It was mom and we'd get up, get breakfast. Okay. Get out of my house.
And where would you go?
All over. So, right behind our house, we've got like 5 acres that butts right up to the Bear River.
Oh, wow.
And so
every day was an adventure.
It absolutely was. And you never knew where you were going to end up until the streetlights came on, because you better be home.
By the time the lights came on.
As soon as them lights came on, you better be home.
That was the cue.
Yep.
So during the day growing up, how many of you ran around together?
So in the neighborhood, there was 10, 12 of us.
And you guys stayed pretty close. So some days there'd be less than other days, but for the most part, it was the same group of kids always running around together.
Yeah. And kind of fractured every now and again. And quite often I was the odd man out. I was the youngest. So I got left behind.
Oh, so what were you into back then? I mean, you guys would get into the river.
They were into everything.
You would build forts.
Anything we could get our hands on. We had where my grandpa on the Webster side ended up building a house. We used to have a little BMX racetrack that we built.
Oh, wow.
ended in a jump and everything.
So into bikes growing up at that age.
Yeah.
Farm okay. animals.
Into any trouble.
Usually.
When you were left out on the 5 acres.
Not usually, because we didn't really get caught. Oh. There was nobody to catch
us. Good answer.
And there was no Facebook.
You know, we were talking about this with Brody, yeah. You know, and how many kids today don't get away with anything because everybody wants to post everything they've got yes. going on. And it's like, well, what do you mean you weren't there? I seen you
on Instagram. Post, yeah.
You were there. not back then. There,
oh, no.
None of that stuff was happening.
That's good.
None of that stuff. We were definitely known as the problem children in the neighborhood.
How old were you at that time? Just so I have perspective.
Five, six, somewhere okay. in there.
Were you playing any sports?
And how old were the oldest? So you talk about a group of a dozen kids. Mm-hmm. You were the lower end.
Yeah.
Younger. So up to
14-ish.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's so, a yeah. big.
Yeah. I could see why you were definitely, they were often looking to get rid of you.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, you were that one.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
So growing up, how would you describe your personality, you know, those early years? Like fun, enthusiastic, kind of pestering.
I'd say fun. I always enjoyed it. Even if I was the odd man out and they left me behind, I'm like, fine, I'll go find my own thing to do.
That's yeah. awesome.
And pretty soon it was the thing he was doing was something with some of their things.
Well, so who was the next child in closest age to you then?
So that'd be
Tina.
Yep. That'd be Clinton in my family.
So there was a 14-year-old and there was a wide span of, mm-hmm. you know, different aged kids. You would break off and go and do your own thing. So there were also some kids that were close in age to you as well that you did some things with.
Most of them were 2 or 3 years older than me.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, but you didn't know any different. Like nobody knew any different. No. That's what you guys did.
Yeah. That's just what we did.
So I want to hear some stories about, because I'm picturing this. So you get kicked out of the house in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and you guys are off on a daring adventure, but kids get hungry and they get thirsty. And so how did that go down?
So some days it'd be, here's some peanut butter and jelly sandwiches sitting on the back porch. There's a hose right there if you need a drink.
Nice.
And didn't matter whose house it was.
No.
Yeah. Show up to somebody's house to get some food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And wow.
The Days or the Evanses, they'd let us in the house.
But not at your house.
No. Mom would get fed up with the kids and she'd lock the door.
Which is really interesting because she actually watches kids. Yeah. So
as we grow in, yeah.
And, yeah. So but you guys were just a lot more rambunctious, I think.
Yes.
Probably.
Yeah. Well, you had farm animals too that you had to take care of, right?
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Probably, I'd say I was about 10 or so, we started doing fair pigs.
Oh, wow.
Always had.
So you had to feed them morning and night? I don't know anything about fair pigs, but.
We had a big feeder that'd take 2 or 3 of the 50-pound bags.
Yeah.
All at once. So it's like once a week, you'd top off the feeder where you'd have to go out every couple of days and make sure the water's there.
Yeah.
And as they progress bigger, you got to take and walk them.
So
keep
who
them moving?
Who yeah. Would, so this is a big process.
So
yeah.
Who holds you accountable? Your dad?
No, dad had nothing to do with it.
Really?
He didn't want anything to do with it. He drove the truck with the trailer. That was his problem.
Yeah.
That's it.
So mom?
It was mom.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So were you into sports or anything at that time? 5 to 8, something like that.
Well, I think let's talk about that 10-year-old area.
Yeah.
Because that's when, you know, even though there's some years difference in age, the size really starts to catch up. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? As far as size.
Yeah.
You know, because when you're 5 years old and you're hanging out with older kids, there's a big difference in size.
Yeah.
But as you get into those early teen years and stuff, the size starts to really kind of come closer together a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because you've always been a small kid.
I actually was always a small kid until puberty hit. I was fighting for being the smallest one in the whole age group.
Do you remember that, Mace?
I do. Yeah. I was quite young myself, yeah. but
Oh man.
Well, and very active. I mean, anything and everything that you could do running around whenever we went over there was keeping up with the cousins because they could run circles around us city folk.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah. And anything that you could, that could be climbed on was climbed all the way to the top. And then you wonder how to get back down.
Yeah.
Like on a roof,
on a roof, on the elementary school, on the bell,
what?
On the old school bells that they had out in front of the elementary school.
When did you start playing football?
I think 8, 10, somewhere in that
range.
Mm-hmm.
And wow. Who pushed you to get into football?
So dad kind of pushed us into, you have to at least try one season of everything. So we did football, we did wrestling, we did baseball, we did.
Yeah. He was out there making you test drive things.
Yes. You get a chance. You get to go try it. If you don't like it, I'm not going to make you do it.
But you have to drive a Ford. You have to drive a Ford truck.
Yeah, not a Chevy.
Ford truck.
Got it.
So forever, dad was a hardcore Chevy.
I know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
one day.
Mm-hmm, and then got the one, like a 2001, 2002, when they first started going hard on the independent diesels. Front suspension. Oh, yeah, yeah. And the diesel.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't ready.
Yeah.
And that was the work truck Ford's working just fine. I'm going to keep rolling with this.
Yeah.
Wow.
So talk about, you know, moving into those early teenage years and you're playing sports and you fell in love with a couple of sports.
Pretty much the only one that really kept me going was that kept with me going through was football.
Yeah. Why?
Good question. I think it's gave me a good outlet.
Uh-huh.
It was a point I could actually take and put some force into anything front of me.
So what was your position?
I played a little bit of everything due to
size.
Yeah. Being littlest of the little. And then, so I started playing lineman right off the start. Didn't know what I was doing and slowly moved back. I played safety forever.
Nice.
And then as I the size caught up with puberty and whatnot, I slowly worked my way back.
Okay.
And all the way through high school, I was offensive line. That was my spot.
And that was your outlet.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was a great major outlet.
I can see that.
Yeah.
But do you remember, you know, the support you had doing that?
I do. I don't really.
Don't remember that.
No.
And the reason why I ask is, you know, your family is born and bred, you know, workers. You know, they're hard workers. And work, mm-hmm. It comes first.
Absolutely.
Seems like, right?
Yes.
And everything you do is like you do it all the way, right?
Yes.
So when you were out playing, it was like you went and played whatever you were doing. It was all the way. Like you said, climb the tree all the way to the top, then figure out how to get down. And that was kind of a little bit of the family, if you will, values, you know? And so when I ask about that support, it's like your dad wanted you to go do those things, but how was your relationship with your dad while you were doing those things?
I don't really remember how specifically with any of the sport stuff. It was here, go.
Yeah. Cause he's not a man of a lot of words. Really.
No, it was a go experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just wanted you to keep doing.
Yes.
Yeah. And I see that.
I've always put it that dad raised us as laborers because he knew how to train a laborer. He didn't know how to raise a child.
Mm.
Did you have a best friend back then in football?
The kind of odd man out loner kind of stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
I was never really part of any of the cliques and little groups. I fit in with everybody else. But everybody else didn't fit with me.
Gotcha.
So you would put yourself out there and you'd want to be a part of whoever else there was to be a part of, just like when you were the little one.
Yes.
But you always felt like nobody fit with you.
Exactly. There was always, I never had much of an issue fitting in with them, but it never stuck and fit back with me.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
How'd that make you feel? I mean, realizing that's the only thing you really knew, how did it make you feel?
That it did take a while till I got to the thought process of why does that matter to me that they don't fit with me?
Yeah.
I'm just going to own it. This is me. Let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that really does describe you. It does. Because you're your own, you have your own set of drums. You've always had your own set of
always.
Drums. Yeah. So I want to hear about high school. Because that's when there's really a spotlight. Cause up until high school, it's kind of the same group of kids, but when you move on to high school, then it's like, I mean, yes, middle school, it's a little bit larger group, right? So, but it's still some of the same kids. But when you get to high school, man, that's where it really shifts.
So at least for Box Elder, it was granted just 2 years instead of three.
Mm-hmm. Cause ninth grade, you went to high school. Yeah.
So at least Box Elder, you had intermediate was 6, 7, middle school was 8, 9.
Yep.
And then high school was 10, 11, 12. So it was the same general group until high school. And then we got one more age group higher added into the mix.
And more kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A whole other grade worth of kids.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you remember about that time?
So I remember its frequent theme is I fit in with everybody, but only one or two hung around that actually fit with me. See, I got in high school, it was primarily me, my best friend, Paul Palevi, and our other good friend, Andrew Sturker, who kind of fell off the bandwagon.
When you say they didn't fit in with me, what is me?
I've never really had to define that.
Maybe talk a little bit about Paul. Was it Paul and Andrew?
Yes.
Talk a little bit about Paul and Andrew. And what made it so easy for them to fit in with you?
Okay.
And that probably would give us a little bit of an idea. What clicked with those guys when you first met them?
It very similar in the approach we had to just being interacting with one another. None of us really followed the social norms that I still don't understand.
Yeah. Because you didn't really understand it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, it sounds like they had in common with you right from the start was they didn't see it that way either.
No.
You know? And, you know, they related to you on that level.
Yeah, there was definitely related on that level. And for a long period, it seemed like Paul was almost imitating me and Andrew doing what we were doing. And I, looking at it now, it's one of those, I always took that for granted and thought that, and I'm like, no, he was just functioning on the same wavelength that we were, and we didn't let him.
How were you guys academically?
So
was school easy for you? Was it tough for you learning?
School all the way through high school, that it was easy. It was show up, walk in, walk out, do what I had to do and leave. And somehow I ended up on the honor roll.
Wow.
Wow.
And I didn't know till my sister sends me a text. Hey, congratulations. I saw it in the paper. You made the honor roll.
And you didn't, I didn't even pay attention to it.
Not even a little bit.
Was that wasn't important to you?
It really wasn't. It was just a letter.
But for you, it was like, show up where I'm supposed to be, yep. Do what I'm supposed to do.
And get out of there.
And get out of there.
Yep. Yeah.
I think when you have a family of the size that you did and the way you were raised, you have a lot going on, right? Your mom's balancing that. Your dad's at work. And so you kind of raised yourself in a lot of ways, right? You watched your siblings. You saw what they were doing, said, okay, they're busy. Where can I find myself? And you see that with your friends, right? Is you were okay with yourself because you spent a lot of time with yourself and you got okay with yourself, mm-hmm. right? You're like, I know him. We're good, right?
Yeah.
And then you see your friends and you see how in high school, I remember being so caught up in what are they doing? Am I doing the right thing? But you had spent that time with yourself that you said, I don't need to wonder what they're doing because I'm fine doing me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really where your friends fit in, right? Because you said, hey, we're all okay with each other and we're just going to let each other have our space and do what we need to do. And
yeah.
Do you remember when your dad went to class?
About all I really remember was him coming home hoarse and can't hardly hear him. I don't have many of the memories of how he was acting when he came back.
I was going to ask if you noticed anything at all.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but
like how he normally used to act. And, you know, you mentioned earlier about how it always came to him so easily on training a laborer,
mm-hmm.
you know, after he went to class, was there anything in particular that you noticed that kind of changed on him?
So I did notice that he felt the need to, in his way, to express the actual care he had for us.
Yeah.
It was very...
Because one of the things I look up most to your dad about is, you know, people that knew him for a long time before would always, you know, describe your dad as just such a serious, you know, get it done work person. And what I'm most fond of him about is that softer side of him. Like, he's got that soft side to him. Now, his way of expressing it is maybe different than a lot of people would know or understand, but it's there.
It's absolutely there.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, what you're describing is that softer, sensitive mm-hmm. side. Like, it's always been there with him. He just never really knew how to express it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And never really let himself.
Yeah. Gave himself express. Permission.
To so do did it change right after he went to class that he expressed it more than you've ever experienced?
At absolutely.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That was a pretty quick change because up to that point, there was no outward expression of it.
Did it change you?
Just knowing how your dad felt about you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It did make a difference actually hearing it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I get to talk to parents all the time that are like, you know, there's not, and no parents I come in contact with that wouldn't say my kids are my everything, you know, but telling their kids is a whole different level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The point when I noticed it with dad the most was actually my teen graduation.
Yeah. So we want to hear about that. How did you find out you were going to class?
Yeah.
Here you go. You're going.
Essentially, I actually forgot to grab it out of the truck, but I've got my whole backpack and everything. Still have the water bottle with the number one.
Oh, wow.
Even just the cheapo water bottle.
You're in chair one?
Yep.
Oh my gosh. You are lucky.
I blamed it on being a Whitaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I walked in and saw that. I'm like,
there's no way this is just a chip by chance.
Yeah, there is no way that's a chance.
It's my last name.
How old were you when you went?
15.
15?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nice.
And so there was two horseshoes of people. It was a big class.
You weren't the first one in the family to go as a teen, no, though.
I can't remember if it was Zane's class or Clint's class that was the first.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you got to watch some siblings go before you.
I wasn't allowed to see. I got to watch them leave.
Okay.
That was it.
And you got to see them when they came home.
Yes.
And did you notice anything?
I didn't pay enough attention to notice any much with either of them.
Yeah. What was your experience like for you?
At first, it was kind of a...
I can only imagine that first speech for you.
Yeah.
Were you accepting of it? Like, when you were going?
I wasn't entire... it was kind of a, okay, I guess I got to go.
Gotcha.
And then it got close and I'm like, I really don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And then once it was there, I'm like, I guess I'm doing this. I'm here. Hey,
I don't have a driver's license.
Yeah.
I'm stuck here. I'm stuck
drive
here.
Away.
The only option is to hike, and that's a long hike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, once again, that, you know, that speaks to the type of a person you are, because we talked earlier about school
mm-hmm.
and how you just went to school. You got it done. It came to you naturally. You knew you had to be there and get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
And your approach was the same thing when you went to class.
Very much so.
Did you go to class with anyone you knew?
There was one of the other guys from work's son that's same age as me, graduated same year, Gage LoCascio. And then...
Did you know him like well before going into
it? I knew Gage pretty well.
Awesome.
So you at least knew one person in class.
Yeah, and then I'd met Cade Kroger, the other guy that rode up with us. I had minimal interactions with
him. Got to interact with one more before he showed up.
I knew him before that. It's,
but you didn't know him yet.
Yeah, didn't really know him very well. He's 2-3 years older.
Oh, wow. So, well, but you get dropped off to class together.
Yeah.
When you reference the two horseshoes, right, that shows you what, how many, 20? In a horseshoe?
I was going to say, I think we were a class 15. Of 48.
Yeah, it had to be at least 40.
I mean, that's a lot for one class going on.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things moving and going on at one time.
Yeah.
So you go in, I mean, what's your takeaways?
He's in chair number one.
Yep. You're in chair number one.
First one to find my chair. Hard to miss. It's the one right inside the door.
Love it.
I'm just like, there is absolutely no coincidence to this.
Yeah.
It's solely because I'm a Whitaker.
Yeah.
So tell us about your experience.
What did you learn about yourself?
I learned kind of a similar takeaway like Dad, in that I really didn't have ever see a outlet for that more sensitive side. There was not an outlet for it.
Which is why you love football.
It gave me an outlet for anything.
Yeah. Yeah, but you could express whatever emotion or whatever feeling, you could express it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And at least
that helmet on and go for it.
Initially going in, one thing is, I think it was partly because I would not let myself express any of it. I had really bad anger issues. Mm. And
what were you mad about?
I don't know, but I get so frustrated, and because I couldn't comprehend what was going on. And up to that point, the only solution I had was either blow up and let it out, or nothing at all matters.
Mm.
That was the options I had up to that point. So I let myself express two emotions. Either I was pissed off or I was happy. That was it. No in between, no nothing.
Do you remember this version of him?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny to have you actually speak on it, because looking back, I remember pieces of it, but not, you know, nothing that to that extent. But there's a lot going on, and, you know, it's easy to get wrapped around that. But you've always had that care for people. I mean, since you were really, really young, and I can only imagine having those feelings and the care you have, that it, you know, you really do care about people.
And it's easy to get your feelings hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
And when that happens and there's no outlet or no way to express it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and being raised by a construction worker, being a male, I'm not saying that he put any kind of projection of you not being able to have emotions, but it comes with the industry, right?
Well, long-term. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely the, you know, if you will, old guard. That's where a lot of it came from. You know, and we talk about it all the time. I mean, we have today with the adults in class, we have some, you know, guys that have been in construction for a long time, and we have some new guys. And I'll tell you that it's definitely shifted, and you've recognized that it's shifted and it's different. The culture now has shifted and it's different, but it's still not easy.
No, it is,
you know,
absolutely not easy, especially if you are somebody who does feel strongly.
Yeah.
So you didn't really feel like you were part of any particular clique when you were in high school or playing football. And you know, you had the two friends that you mentioned, a little bit of a struggle on others connecting with you. You go to class, that environment just breeds that whole team concept.
Mm-hmm.
How did that feel?
That,
like a 180 from what you were doing in high school.
Yeah. So initially, it's just, I'm going through the motions. This is what needs to be done. I'm getting it done.
Yep.
And then.
And you chose to fail yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
You did.
I chose to fail myself a lot.
Yeah.
And it was it made a major impact, in that all of a sudden there wasn't the thought of, oh, do they fit in? No, we're going this way. Everybody's together. We're going this way. I don't know what we're doing. We're going this way.
Yeah. Well, you started to develop a lot of trust for one another. And when you develop that level of trust, and again, you only knew a couple of people barely walking into the class.
Yeah.
But you being able to start to trust other people, that is your environment.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you flourished. Because you're naturally somebody who's going to do you, be you, doing it, whatever it takes. So as long as you can trust people that you can just be you, it's easy for you. Where other people, that it was difficult for them.
Mm-hmm.
You just make a choice and go.
Exactly. Just remove the hesitation and quit caring what they're thinking about. Because what is that? Does that, the way they think and view you, is that changing you?
Yeah.
That's the way I had to work through things, and just, okay, we're going.
So how did you learn to express yourself in that training? Because there were lots of tools. There were lots of moments. There were lots of opportunities where you just got to, if you will, share.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you weren't the first one to go, oh, I'll share.
No, absolutely not. I wasn't the first, but I would not be the last.
But other people did, and it gave you permission to do the same thing, yes, which was something that was new.
Yes, very much so. The biggest impact being the second night, and that I was probably second or third person to share.
You're talking about after your letters?
After the letters, yep. And that I wasn't going to let myself not share at that point.
What were in those letters?
Lots of the emotions and the feelings that my family is terrible at expressing.
Was there a letter from Dad?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. It's okay.
Yeah. I remember the contents, just like him normally, mm-hmm, was very short, mm-hmm, comparatively.
Yeah.
I think the last one I actually picked up. So everything was already ripped open and raw. Yeah. And I got the little snippet. I'm pretty sure it's still in the backpack.
Yeah.
Out in the truck.
Sometimes that's all you need. A lot, you know, you don't, mm-hmm, need to have a book.
No.
You know, I mean, with how he went through class and how it changed him and he became more expressive. Sometimes that's all you need is just a few words.
Yeah.
It says a lot.
A lot.
Well, and your mom was very expressive.
Yes.
So your dad didn't need to be expressive.
Yeah,
there wasn't enough room for both people to be, and I love your mother. I mean, she, yes, is fantastic. But I'm just saying, she's always been a very expressive, mm-hmm, you know, person.
And although expressive, the talking out those feelings and specifically directed wasn't very often said by the time I went to class.
So you getting to hear those things from your family, that was a game changer.
That was one of the biggest impacts of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. So you moved through the class. You got some great sleep that night, I'm sure.
I slept fine.
but the next day is when your family shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And your family shows up for who?
Just for me.
Yeah.
That's it. It's the only reason they showed up.
And who all was there?
So we had, I think it was Mom, Dad, and my younger sister, Josie, were the only ones. I don't remember Zane or Clint being there. They might have just been driving the vans.
Yeah. No kidding. But they show up for you.
Yes.
Do you remember your block? Do you remember what your block was?
I don't. It's in my bag. I guarantee it. I've got both blocks.
Just curious. I love that's this. That, you don't have to. I was wondering.
Yeah. I don't remember what was on either of them.
Because it doesn't matter.
No,
because once Cordell goes, I'm done.
Yeah,
he's done.
Yeah,
it's on. It's gone.
It doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. It's back there.
Yeah.
So you graduate.
Mm-hmm. How was graduation? That? Because I that's definitely all of our like favorite. Yeah.
Well, it was great. The having gone through and received the certificate.
Yeah, passing yourself.
Yep. And there's words in here somewhere.
Yeah. So you do the projection.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's out there to support you, watching you.
Mm-hmm.
And
which I know that he was lit on fire.
Yeah.
Like completely lit on fire.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So did it take one attempt?
Only one attempt.
I knew it.
What was not going to let it be a second attempt.
Sad I missed that.
But you got to share to your mom and dad.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
they got to share to you.
Yeah. And that's the first time I can really think of Dad expressing that and actually saying it. And he very much has the same thing I got going on. The more you feel, the more it affects the way your ability to even talk.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Words just do not come out.
And how is it now after both of you have gone through class separate times?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you feel even more of a closeness with Dad now?
Yeah, absolutely. We're still both terrible at saying it directly.
Yeah.
But it is very much implied in a lot of the ways we go about it.
Mm. So you leave class, you're feeling great, right? You got, mm-hmm, a whole bunch of new friends, but you go back into life.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say that your life was really chosen for you. However, it almost was. Like it's like you have all these role models. What are these role models of yours doing?
Mm-hmm. kind of shoehorns you in a direction.
It's kind of, well, I mean, you can't help but think it's like those are your role models. Those are your mentors. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the people you look up to. And so you end up going off and, you know, finishing high school. Let's hear about finishing high school, because, you know, I don't think you waited to really finish high school before it was time to really start taking action on putting in some work, right? There was all kinds of work to put in.
Oh, absolutely. There's way more work that actually needed to be done.
Yeah.
That was more what I was interested in rather than the high school. The high school, I had to be there.
Yep.
And
it was a formality.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the way my brain handled it. It was a formality. I got to be there. So I'll get it done. Whatever. Could have graduated early, took a bunch of extra classes, because what's the point in going to work? I can only, at that point, I could only work in the shop. Can't go out on a crew and start real work until you're 18.
Yeah.
And so, and all my friends are still there. So why
take some extra classes, yep. Stick in school, stick with the friends.
Yeah.
How was football season finished in high school?
So unluckily my senior year, I didn't play a single game.
Yeah.
During our purple and white scrimmage, helmets only, had little freshman standing in, and I pulled around the line, and he's just looking at the daisies, watching butterflies. And he's like, okay, I don't care how much I'm going to run for this. I'm going to launch him. So I break down, plant hard. I remember my hands hitting his chest, hearing myself say, ow. I don't remember it hurting. And I was on my back. Blew my AC, ended up blowing out my ACL.
It's pretty tough.
Yeah. And ended up not playing a single game senior year.
But what did you do?
I got to be the hype man.
Yeah.
That was my spot.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And that was...
You got to express yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I was more hoarse after one of those games than I was after the team class.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but you figured out how to still put it all out there for everyone else.
Exactly. Yeah. They didn't... There was not a single chant, cheer of any kind that I wasn't the instigator.
Nice.
Love it.
Nice.
That's awesome. Proud of you for really sticking that out, because it would have been easy to quit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was at least one other guy that was on the team that had gotten injured and wasn't going to be able to play. I think he showed up for one game,
mm-hmm.
one home game, and
never showed up again.
Nope.
Yeah. But you finished.
Finished all the way.
Strong.
Mm-hmm.
So you graduate and you had some support there.
Oh yeah. I know for sure grandma, grandpa, and the majority of my family. Echo's the oldest and by quite a ways. So she was by that time moved out, married, starting a family. I don't think if I remember right, she wasn't there.
Yeah. But everyone else,
I think everybody else was there.
And one more time you chose to pass yourself.
Absolutely.
But what happened after high school? Cause this is where one of the things I want to point out is, you know, You still were going to get it done. And we want to talk about some of the things you got done. But one of the biggest things that I'm most proud of you for is your ability to continue to volunteer, to continue to show up, to continue to give back. You know, we were talking about it before we started tonight. And it's like when we had the classes up until 2020, till COVID, we had all the classes up at the Environmental Center. And anybody that's ever been in the Environmental Center, like the walk up to the Environmental Center is a fine walk for most, but there are so many people that is not an okay walk.
No.
So what were you doing?
I ran the shuttle van.
Yeah.
And took time during work, like after school.
Yeah.
We'd work 2-3 hours working in the shop, and we'd take time. And I mean, we would strip the van out, take every single seat out, carpet clean the floors, wash all the windows,
put everything back in.
Yeah.
It's very much needed to be done. They were filthy. Yeah. I wouldn't have put regular people.
Well, if you guys can imagine, these are crew transport vans where they transport crew members to the job site. So this is no small undertaking. This is a major thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're pretty big vans, right?
Yeah, they're like 10-passenger, 12-passenger vans or whatever. Yeah.
They're 5 rows of seats.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, maybe they're 15 passengers.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I think they were bigger than 12.
Damn,
yeah.
Dude,
like a big task like a to clean and a big task anyway, to drive.
You would take the time.
Mm-hmm.
You'd take the time to clean the vans. Take the time to clean that van out so that van was respectable for people to get in it and get a ride.
Mm-hmm.
Not only to grad, but back from grad. So
yes.
You'd shuttle all the families and the parents up to graduation, park the van.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be there cheering everybody on for graduation, yep. Making sure that they could all hear you. And then when it was over, you'd load all the families up and shuttle them back down to their cars over and over again.
I just realized that's where I recognize you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just remember going, you know, who told you to do that? And it's like, I don't really know if it was something that was, because I remember asking Mike and it's like, no, Cordell actually just, that's what he wanted to do. He was all about it. It's like the idea was there. It was the need. There was a need for it. Right. So he had this outcome and a need for something. And he was like, oh, I got this.
Mm-hmm. So the first time or two, my older brothers did it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Zane did it once, I think. And then it was me and Clint first. And then Clint stopped doing it. And it became me and whoever I could wrangle up.
Mm-hmm.
And you loved it.
Absolutely. That was as much fun for me getting everybody there as it was to be there to support everybody else.
Yeah. But he was doing it on his own time.
Giver's gain.
Yeah.
And but yeah, every and they'd always be all covered in rapport sayings, anything I could come up with.
Yeah. Skinny branches. I remember that on the van.
That one was branches. Always there.
Yeah.
The one I was driving, I always made sure big headliner had the Empower to cross it.
Yep. Nice. Nice.
So I mean, you think about that and go, who does that?
Yeah, I thought the same.
You know what I mean? Like, who does that?
They spent a lot of time on that.
Taking it serious.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to do it, you might as well do it all the way.
It's that it's that ripple effect, that drop in a lake. That's you.
And it took years for me to ever realize the impact that just me frequently driving the van had on others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everybody would go, I can't believe they did that.
Yeah.
I can't believe they made that happen.
Was that after you went to class or before?
That was after.
After.
Yeah. I wasn't allowed to
show up with that kind of enthusiasm.
Yeah. That's right. I wasn't allowed to see the place.
Yeah. Before.
Before I went to class.
Yeah. That was the all will be known in due time.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it was, you'd have mom and Clint talking something about it. And then it's a, no, we're not given any more information. All will be known in due time.
You're going to say something, Mace.
I'm just looking back. It makes me laugh because you drove, I think, for my class.
Probably.
I'm pretty sure you did. And I'm like, oh, yeah, because you were there for sure. I mean, you didn't miss graduations. I was there. Yeah.
Yeah. And if it was an option, I was there.
So how is what you learned, experienced, and I know I wanted to highlight the giver's gain piece because it's just foundationally just such a big part of who you are and the beautiful person you are. But what are some of the things that you learned and that you've continued to apply as you've started to build a career for yourself?
That's a hard one to put words to, again, because I make the decision and I go, I forgot what the decision was. I just went.
Yeah. So the just doing.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But you've always had like this energy about you. Like anytime I'm around you, you've always got this great energy, you know, sometimes I'm worried about it.
Yeah. You bottle it up and sell
it. You know what I mean? Sure. Sometimes you got to be a little worried about it.
Yeah.
But you know, you've always got great energy. Let's hear about some of the things you've actually done since high school. Cause you've been pretty busy.
Yeah. So right out of high school, started out on one of our natural gas crews, just as a laborer, did that for the first summer and fall out of high school. Then decided I was going to go do the construction management program at Weber State.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, that became a formality as well. I was just there to get it done.
Who thought that was a good idea?
It was kind of mentioned. It was kind of a, I'll pay for you to go.
This is something that's probably a good idea if you go do it and you're going, it is, huh? All right.
Yeah. And then, there was a, at the time, a promise of being brought in more if you got a degree.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't matter what the degree was.
Yep, you'd be more involved if you get a degree.
Yes.
Yep.
And so off I went to get the degree. But then I was working full-time, going to school full-time, and enjoying myself full-time.
Yeah, because you always do that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so there was a period of 2 or 3 years. I probably slept 4 or 5 hours a week.
Wow.
Yeah, that, looking back, it was, I had a lot of fun doing that.
I'm like, this is taking time
off. And now having calmed that part down, and I'm like, you know, that was actually miserable. I don't know why I thought that was fun.
Yeah, I think that's a time in life, though. You know, it fit that time in your life.
It did.
So what else?
And so going back and forth between field work in the summers and in winter, spring doing college, back and forth, that I'd do field work for summer. And then during the school year, I'd go and I'd help out the mechanics in the shop. Initially started just as a continuation of the shop kid duties and slowly moved towards me actually being one of the mechanics.
Nice.
But got plenty of experience in some of the office side things with going through all of the schooling, but primarily had field. I went out in the field. I got the work done.
What did you gravitate towards?
Out of all the different things I've been in is the sewer and water stuff. It's the deep, wet, and nasty.
You like that?
Yes. Yeah.
That's a family thing.
By far, my favorite place to be is in the bottom.
Yeah.
I want to be in the hole. Running machinery bores me.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'll run for a while and then I'm nodding off. It's one of those, nope, I'm getting bored.
So without going into too much graphic detail,
mm-hmm.
to someone like me who has no idea what you do on a job like that down in the sewer, can you kind of give me the Reader's Digest version a little bit?
He's the guy that makes your life so wonderful and amazing because everybody's doesn't have a lot of gratitude for the fact they turn on their faucet and water comes out, or they flush their toilet and everything goes away. This is the magic man.
Is that work on an existing pipeline and sewer setup, or are you installing new?
Primarily it's new install.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always a point of tie-in.
Yep. When you got new infrastructure, it's got to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm. It comes down to you almost end up being the boss of your boss in a properly working crew. It's all what does the pipe layer need to get the job done?
Mm-hmm.
Because nothing happens without the pipe layer. But it's a double-edged sword. So something bad happens, it's the pipe layer's fault.
Yeah. So where are you now?
So now I'm a project engineer, but I'm in a little bit of a unique position in that regard because I do a little bit of what the other project engineer guys do, but they do almost nothing of what I do.
Got it.
I overheard a conversation, them talking about taking a little bit different approach with some of our superintendents, getting some of the... Because stereotypically, they're brought up from labor and just brought up through into the superintendent position. They're talking, getting some more of the college-educated people and trying some of that. And
doing some of that.
Yeah, Whitaker doesn't try anything.
There's no two
words. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. But doing some of that, and I have a feeling that I am that guinea pig.
That's going to be exciting.
I'm seat number one again.
Oh yeah. I mean, we're excited about that. Yeah, dude, you got so much energy. I love it. I wish you could bottle it up and take it home with me right now.
No joke. Yeah. I love it.
Well, and he just bought a house.
What?
Yeah. Just a few houses down across the street.
Mm-hmm. On 5 acres.
No,
10.
Half acre.
That's plenty to take care of when you're working. That much.
It's me and my best friend, Paul.
Nice.
That's the only people, 5-bedroom house.
Wow.
It's exciting.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So what's next?
Yeah.
That's the big question, because I have not defined what's next yet.
What would be your perfect future? What's next?
So why don't you ask your question?
So
let's close the gap on a little bit.
Yeah. If you sit here, Cordell, mm-hmm. and you say in 5 years, this is where I'm going to be. Where is that? Where are you going to be?
How old are you today?
30.
Okay. So 35 years old. Where do you see yourself? What's your life look like?
Are you still a project engineer? Possibly.
I like the unique position.
Yeah.
In that I've got enough responsibility and trust and everything, but I'm left alone. Hmm. This is what we need done. I don't care how it gets done. Do it.
Got it. So having the trust 5 years from now, it's having mm-hmm. that trust to be that person.
Oh yeah.
Got it.
And I wouldn't be opposed to moving up, but I'd be happy where I'm at as far as work's concerned.
Yeah.
I've got no desire to ever leave Whitaker at the moment.
So you're working at Whitaker.
Yep. Working at Whitaker.
How many years you been there now?
16.
Yeah.
Started at 14.
30 years old. Dude's got 16 years in already. I love it.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
His Aesop loves it as well.
Yes, it does.
And the Aesop didn't start till, I think I was
2008.
20.
Yeah. But still 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It still loves it.
Because a little bit of that out of high school didn't get classified as full time.
Yeah.
So it didn't start out that.
Where do you see yourself spending your time outside of work? So we talked about work a little mm-hmm. bit. Where else do you see yourself in 5 years? Personally, you know, what are you doing for fun? You know,
no matter what, waterfowling's not going anywhere. That's a lifetime hobby. That's never going anywhere.
Are you going to still climb up on top of schools at 35 and to the top?
It's been a minute since I've been climbing up on top of schools.
Okay. Yeah. Just checking.
But we did figure out that the old lettering on the front of the elementary school made a pretty good ladder.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years with your family? Cause your dad's making a pretty good transition right now.
Yeah.
Mom's making a pretty good transition right now.
Mm-hmm.
All the siblings are making trends. Everybody's, you know, changing and shifting and adapting. And it's like new chapters everywhere. Where do you see yourself with the family?
I would very much like to see myself with a partner, not a wife, not a girlfriend, a partner.
Uh-huh.
I'm not worried about the visual side of things. I want someone that clicks. Mm-hmm. I want somebody that wants to come along on a random adventure that just popped up. Let's go.
I can see it.
I can too.
I'm terrible at planning.
We should name, we should bring a name to this said person. Should name this person.
But the planning? No, random spontaneous.
Being
let's just
spontaneous.
Go.
So you see yourself being very spontaneous, having mm-hmm. a life partner, working at Whitaker,
mm-hmm.
lots of waterfowl.
Yep. Lots of waterfowl hunting.
Lots of shotguns.
I love it.
See.
What's one piece of advice you give to a 15, 16 year old right now? Maybe somebody that's gotten knocked down, or maybe somebody that doesn't fit in. Somebody doesn't know how to fit in.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the best things you can do is to understand that no matter what way they think of you, does not change the way that you think of you. Does not change who you are. Own it and go.
Profound. Very profound.
Well, thank you so much, Cord. Seriously, it was such a privilege to have you on. And, you know, knowing you my whole life, it has been so interesting to learn all the things I didn't know about you.
Yes.
Really. And just, I can't wait to see you continue to grow and do all the amazing things that you're doing.
And thanks,
so very proud.
And thanks for cheering people on.
Hey,
yeah.
We love you, brother.
Love you too, guys.
That's all.
Respect, integrity, passion, personal power, leadership, enthusiasm. This has been the Empowering Youth Podcast from Building Utah Youth. To become part of the 3%, visit Building Utah Youth on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, or on our website at buildingutahyouth.org.